All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? What's happening? I am Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you feeling? I feel better, all right? I told you on Monday that I must have been about 2 or 3 days into COVID. It's weird because I feel okay, and my symptoms are okay, but when I did test positive, I was like, well, I'm calling the doc. I'm going to need some of that Paxlovid. I got to get on like this, that old timey COVID panic. I just, you know, I didn't want to like, oh my God, with the old protocols, it was like, you just waited for sometimes, you know, 10 to 14 days until you tested clean, looking at that second line, like, oh, it's just a hint. It's just, it's not, there's not hardly anything there. It's not, oh my God. I don't think I can take it anymore. But whatever the case, wherever we're at now, whatever I got, it's manageable. Like I'm about, what, 4 days in? And it really didn't have much of a different impact than a kind of a bad cold or one of those identifiable cold flu-y things. Like my fever never got too high. My lungs never got fucked up. I never got a sore throat. My head is thick with snot. It's thick. It's deep, too. So I just tried to take care of myself. But I did call, you know, to do that thing that sort of like, oh, do you have the Paxlovid? I don't want to die. Yeah, that's where that comes from, that era, I think. And the doc I talked to said, look, man, we're not, well, she didn't say man. But she said, you know, Paxlovid is not really up to date. It was designed for an older strain. It sometimes there are side effects that are kind of fucked up. Diarrhea, nauseousness, maybe vomity. I don't know. You know, the regular list of the side effects. And that they really only use it for people who are, you know, immunocompromised or health compromised, otherwise or older. And she was like, and I'm like, well, what do I do? She's like, well, ride it out, you pussy. She didn't say that last part. Jason Ritter is on the show today. Now, I didn't know a ton about him. You know, I knew who he was. I knew he's the son of John Ritter. I knew he is married to Melanie Lynskey, who's been on the show before and who I love. And people told me that he would be a good guy to talk to. But that's all I really had to go on. But then I kind of learned a little more about him, and I'm like, all right, let's do it. He's got some stuff. It's hard to be the son of a dad who everyone loved, everyone, and who passed away. It's difficult. And, you know, that's all I knew going into it, and I really enjoyed that conversation. And now he and Melanie have different but matching WTF Brian Jones mugs. So look, I'm going to be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater. That's tomorrow, Friday, September 20th. I will be beyond the 5-day isolation. I do think I'll feel okay for it. Then I'll be in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday. There'll be about 600 to 700 of us in a room that seats 1350. So that'll be intimate. It'll be nice. You know, it'll feel special. And then I'll be back here in LA at Largo on Thursday, October 3rd. And I'll probably be doing some comedy store spots here and there. I'm doing a benefit for Kamala this Sunday. I guess that would be the 22nd at the comedy store, because I am 100% behind Kamala Harris. There you have it. Don't hit me with the like, but what about how she, I don't care. But what about where she stands? It doesn't matter. But don't you think you ought to think through the policy? No, I don't care. It's fascism we're fighting. Look at the big picture. Whatever tool you need to fight the big F, let's do it. So you're asking yourself, so Mark, how did you spend your time with this COVID at home isolating, trying not to lose your mind? What did you do with that time, sir? Well, as there's some important stuff, as I told you on, what day was it? Monday. You know, there's been things building. My bathroom drawers were full of shit that I didn't understand anymore. Attempts at things, you know, different nose hair trimmers, stuff I didn't like, tubes of stuff that I got on a trip to Europe at some point, vitamins from a foreign country, many travel size things that were half emptied or repurposed to hold different things. Like, just, I don't know, seemed like a lifetime of garbage. And you know that moment you have where you're like, oh, I'm going to fucking throw all this away. I mean, all of it. Like, just stuff, like, even if it's, like, technology, even if it's stuff you plug in, you can throw shit away you have to plug in. Fuck it. Well, don't you want to give it to Goodwill? No, I'm not going to start sorting and hoarding and doing hoarding organizing for another place. It was so great. I just threw so much shit away, and now there's nothing there, and I probably have to buy toothpaste. But whatever. Still, oh, there was a lot of little tubes of toothpaste of brands I didn't even use. I don't even know where they came from. The dentist, the road, I don't know. I don't know, but I'd never throw anything away. And then I did. And I feel lighter. I feel kind of amazing. Yeah, it was pretty good. I put the guitars I don't use in the closet. I arranged my amps. I got out the MXR clone looper, which I've had for like probably over a year. I tried to do it once, and I just need, I'm just, you know, it's stupid. But I did figure it out. I followed some instructions. I did a very basic attempt at some looping, which you'll hear at the end of this episode. And I got to be honest with you, it was a pretty exciting thing to sort of get just a very basic two-chord loop going, and then for me to play lead on top of me playing rhythm, it kind of freed me up. Because I generally don't get to play lead with anything but records or guys who are better than me. So I just was able to lay down a kind of a mediocre rhythm and then play my mediocre lead riffs over it, trying to use my Mixolydian scales. Trying to use my major and Mixolydian scales. I'm not sure I know the difference. I think I was using them. It sounded kind of like Jerry-ish. Anyway, that happened. That was a long time coming. So, okay, I'm feeling better, but like right now, I feel like my voice isn't great. I finished, wow. Brain fog. COVID brain fog. Holy shit. I'm in trouble. How am I going to remember my material? How am I even going to do anything if I can't fucking pull a name up that out of my head, you know, from that I knew this morning? Right? Wow. Anyway, I finished Kathleen Hanna's book. I'm going to talk to her, I think, next week. I don't know when we're going to put it up, but man, it's a great book. You know, I read these biographies and I feel very close to the people after I read them. I was emotionally invested. Where she's not that much younger than me, so a lot of the world that she was talking about artistically was, anyway, there's no reason for me to talk about that now when I can talk about it, you know, before I talk to her. Okay? Have we had enough? I'm starting to sweat a little bit. Look, Jason Ritter, he's on this new CBS show. It's a retread. Is that how you say it? Redo. What is it? What? Brain fog. They rebooted Matlock, which was, what's that guy's name? Andy Griffith's show when he was 100. And it stars Kathy Bates. Ritter's in it. It premieres this Sunday, September 22nd. I talked to Jason Ritter. It was a very nice and pretty deep and great guy. Good conversation. And here we are doing that.
I'm watching so many fucking movies. God forbid I work on the part.
I know, and that's always the struggle.
Is it? Like, am I doing it? Am I doing it enough? Am I the guy?
Am I doing it The question for me is always, am I doing it enough or am I doing it too much? You know, like it's a weird thing where I feel like I have to put it down at a certain point. Otherwise, I'll overthink it.
Oh, right, right. And then you're completely detached from the 2 minutes you have to do the acting.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But then I'm like, I can't work on it too much. And then I go in and I can't remember my lines. And I'm like, I should have done it a little bit more.
At least you know the lines. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I like now at this point, because I've been on this show like, 2.5 months, like it gets to the point where you're like, am I even doing the guy anymore? Am
I right.
Even,
yeah.
Am I even, is this the character?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the bothersome part about
it. Are you having fun, though? Is it you like working on it? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody's great.
Seems like, yeah.
You kind of want, the real thrill of it is if you have a scene where there's some meat to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not most of them.
Right.
A lot of times.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, you know, we're doing a half a page. You just say, like, I'm here. And you're like, oh, that's half the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But,
oh, my gosh.
But there are moments where that's just what I've been focusing on. Like, yeah. can I access, like, okay, make a decision about this guy and how he acts. And then, like, when the emotional stuff happens, you know, and this is sort of a dramedy.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm in there. I'm like, I'm going deep, man. I'm going to fucking find this sadness. And now I'm wondering, like, am I going to be the only guy doing that?
Yeah. Here he comes again. Hey, guys. Wow, that this is really...
sad, cranky guys really leaning into it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's kind of taking away the funny part.
No, but yeah, I think you're so great at that, like marrying those two worlds of comedy and
the sadness.
Drama. Well, just yeah. Having it have like a weight and having it have and feel having it feel like a real person and never, you know, I don't know. You were so amazing in Glow.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good, you know, and that there were some sad parts. And I worked with your wife on that one episode of Easy.
Yeah, yeah.
That was some of the best acting I did,
I think. She loved it. That was and she was pregnant when she did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a very funny moment in that where, like, where she wasn't supposed to be pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, so you're having another one? That was yeah, like the
she
first
says,
thing
I'm
I said.
I'm not pregnant. Yeah, I know. It was like, because she was like 6 months or something like that. And so I think you guys had a conversation where we're like, we have to acknowledge.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah,
somehow.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's such
it was
a
great.
Funny way to do that. I'm not pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It was the worst. Like, here I'm trying to, like, you know, kind of take responsibility
for
whatever she's, you know, for my improprieties.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the first thing I say.
Oh, it's so perfect. What a great way to start off an already awkward
we had that,
scene.
But
we it
just
was great.
Had that one day. It was good.
She loved that. That was so fun.
How's she doing?
She's doing great.
Yeah?
Yeah. She's
working.
Working, yeah. Oh, my
god.
Are
they doing more Yellow Jackets?
Yeah, she's back right now, but she's been going back and forth from Vancouver. Over to do
she's up there too?
Yeah, yeah. You guys should have a coffee.
We should.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was up there.
Yeah.
When's she going back up there?
She has a pretty good break. I think actually, we're both going to go up next week.
Oh.
Yeah. Like
I'm going
maybe
back
Wednesday.
Up tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Because for the most part, our daughter's been in school and Melanie's been coming back and forth.
Yeah.
And so for a month, the idea was that I was going to be the one going back and forth, but then we were moving and all sorts
of that's
stuff,
an actor's so. Life. I don't even understand.
It was.
I'm away from my cats for 2 weeks and I'm like, are they okay?
Yeah.
Are they going to remember me?
It was really hard for Melanie being. This is the longest like she's been away. But she would come back. I mean, she would come back every
anytime.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Like I would be like, have a weekend. You can,
yeah,
you
don't
can relax.
Make
we
yourself
got
crazy.
It.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And she's like,
Saturday morning.
I want to. Yeah.
For 2 days.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
She just like, it was.
So that's a normal thing.
For her, yeah. I mean, you
well,
know,
I thought
she's
I was being
tired.
Crazy. Like anytime I back, I'm going to come back.
Absolutely. It's, you know,
yeah.
You feel the
just
emotional element.
You got to reground yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's a huge part of it.
But that thing you did, the Matlock thing, that was here, right?
That's here. I'm still doing it. I'm almost done.
Oh, it's still in it?
Yeah. Yeah, huh. Still going. Like, I have 3 episodes from the end of the season.
It's interesting because I watched a pilot, you know, and there is a world of like just old school TV acting.
Yeah, yeah.
You like, and I don't, because none of us, you know, are constant, like it's, It used to be all there was.
Right,
was
right.
TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you see TV, you're sort of like, wow, this is kind of old-timey.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
But a lot of people, certainly of a certain age, watch just TV, procedurals and whatnot, and it's sort of like a procedural, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's like a case of the week and, I mean, a case of the day.
Yeah.
I guess it's a weekly television show. So, but then there's also like a mystery that kind of goes
through. Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Is it really based on, because I can't remember Matlock, I kind of.
I checked out a couple episodes.
You did?
Yeah. And it's
Andy
really
Griffith.
Funny. Yeah. It's, Andy Griffith. And the idea of it is, because I was a Columbo guy. That was the show that, like.
Were you alive for Columbo? Or were you watching repeats of it?
I watched repeats of it.
Nick at Night or something? Or?
Well, Mariana Palka that mm-hmm. you worked with on
Glow. On Glow, yeah, sure. The Viking.
Yeah. She and I. We went into a deep Columbo
dive,
and we ended up getting all the DVD box sets.
Oh, you did?
Like that. Yeah, and just like we would find out if there was a new movie or something. And he's just, Peter Falk is just so great.
But he is great.
Matlock is a similar sort of idea.
Yeah.
Not a detective, but a lawyer, but people basically underestimate him. That's right. The whole thing is he's just like, what's this? I don't know what I'm doing.
A country bumpkin who's like,
yeah.
Smarter than everybody.
Exactly.
And that's Kathy Bates.
And that's Kathy Bates, yeah.
How's she doing?
She's great.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like, it's incredible to watch her her stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Just because it's like, I don't know.
She's intense, man.
She is intense, yeah.
Yeah.
And she'll come in, and I think part of the character is like, oh, I'm just talking, don't worry about me. So she has like monologue after monologue after monologue that she's just like rattling through.
Yeah.
And it makes you, especially in the pilot, there was like a couple scenes where she comes in, has like three pages of just talking, and I have like my one line, and I'm sitting there just like, I just gotta zing it in there and don't mess it up. But it is weird being in a scene with someone that you hold so
I know it's crazy. It's crazy.
You're just like, it's hard to just be present and be in it and be like, oh, we're both actors. We're peers
in this
moment.
Right.
It's always hard to just be like, just don't mess it up. Let her,
listen. Just listen.
Just be present.
Stay engaged.
Like going outside of yourself and be like, oh, this is Kathy Bates.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Or you're sitting there, here comes my time.
Oh my gosh. that especially when I have these one little lines that I throw in a scene, I'm like, okay, good, I got them all in order. with the lawyer lingo sometimes too. I'm just in my head saying the four word phrase.
They have no idea what you mean. I'm doing my show's based on golf, and I don't know anything about golf, so I got to do these sort of like he's going to hit into the bunker, it should roll, and I'm like, oh, I don't even know what this shit is, and when. So I got to be like, so the bunker's a sand pit, right? That's a sand pit.
Oh yeah, my gosh, that's so.
And
funny.
Then when I talk in golf lingo, but it's weird. I think once you appreciate the idea of acting, like, because when you want to be good at it, you're like, I should really know about this. I should be in it.
Oh yeah.
I got to do some research, and I did. But ultimately, you're pretending to know.
That's the thing. Yeah, I.
And if you can pretend well. You're all set.
Exactly. And then,
no one's going to be like, he really doesn't know what he's talking about.
I know. I had a thing where I like had to play like a hacker, a guy who's like really good at computers.
Yeah.
And I started like looking into it and like, what are people do? Like, what are they pressing? What buttons are they pressing?
Oh, yeah.
And then I was just like, I'm going to just do little circles with my hands on the computer. And if somebody is like, he's not really hacking, it's different than piano or something like that.
Yeah, musical. Yeah.
Basically,
the guys who are going to say he's not really hacking are like, who cares?
Right.
But
press return every once in a while.
But of course you're not.
Right. That's the thing. And the point is not like I'm getting it accurate. I think there's like a part of my brain that thinks of like Jeffrey Rush and Shine when he does, Flight of the Bumblebees, and it's him, and it's amazing.
Yeah, like all the methody kind of stuff.
Yeah,
where you're
like pan from my hands.
Like you're doing
to the actual actor.
Right, junket interviews where you're like, well, I could have become a professional hacker. That's how deep I got into it.
Yeah,
I actually was at home and I hacked into the Pentagon, and I'm like, all right, I got this.
Yeah, exactly.
At least I can do the character now.
Like, actually, I had 3 days between the time that I got the part and we had, or whatever it
right,
is,
exactly.
Like,
I think
this thing of like, hey, we're casting you as this part, and you have 6 months to really prepare and get into
it.
It's like, no, you have a couple weeks, maybe.
And then what do you do with the 6 months? And then you get there, and like, unless you're a certain type of actor, you're just sort of like kind of doing you anyways.
Well, that's the thing. And I also, I always like, I think there's a certain level of like, of confidence that I always think about, you know, like Daniel Day-Lewis or somebody like that. And yeah. like, you know, that first day on set where, you know, on like There Will Be Blood or something yeah. like that, where yeah. like he's been in the woods for 6 months and he's like, he talks like people talked back yeah. in the day
yeah.
or something. And then he yeah. shows up on set and he goes, "Hello, my name is," and yeah. you're like, everyone's like, that like I couldn't do that. I feel I even if I really did work on it, and he's brilliant. I'm yeah, like, yeah, you know, obviously, nah. but like I, there's a certain level of like
yeah, you just got to accept it.
Yeah, he's I
there's like 5 actors that do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then like you know, and then there's another 5 that you know you think they're doing that, but they just kind of got a natural thing that you can't even explain.
Yeah, exactly.
And they just can lock in. I don't know. I think about it a lot. In terms of like how much you bring to it. But then like the weird thing is when you do work with big actors, you know, they're just people.
Right.
And they've got whatever tricks they've got, you know, to whatever they're doing.
Yes.
It's exactly. just the services thing. And yeah. then it's, you know, it's done and you're like, all right. Well,
yeah. exactly. Exactly.
You
know?
But when you grow up watching it, you're like, oh my God. It's fucking amazing. Like, I did that one scene with De Niro and the Joker.
Oh, my God.
And I was literally, like, watching him because I was on the set all week, and he's doing this. He's playing that talk show host. And he doesn't know his lines, you know, and it's and they're doing over and over again. And I'm, you know, and it's, like, totally demystifying De Niro to me because, you know, I've watched him my whole life. I mean, obviously, he's a great actor, but because they understand something, people who live their lives on camera and have been doing it that long. Because I'm watching, I'm like, this is a disaster. How are they going to cut this together? He can't fucking. It's like he's not even getting the lines.
Oh my
But
God.
He knew, like he knew that it was all going to cut up right.
Yeah.
You know, they're just sort of like he's been on set so many times where he's going to do it and do it and do it and they'll find one.
Right. You know? Exactly. And he's kind of yeah.
And I don't like always think to do that. Like you can think like, well, let's shoot a series. I'll just do it over and over again. Like I'm working. Timothy Oliphant is on the set now.
Oh right.
He's got a support role in this, and he showed up, and you know he's doing a thing, and it's me and Owen, and it's a big scene, and it's like you know we're about to leave or do something. It's transition. He's got like a little bit of a monologue. So like and we deal with the setup for it, and then he just keeps doing it over and over again without really telling us, you know. So he just goes back into it, but I know what he's doing because it's his coverage,
right? Right.
So like, fuck it,
yeah, yeah.
Let's just keep going. Then as other actors, you're like, well, I'm gonna be here to support him, and keep answering him, keep.
yeah. The only time when it's complicated is when you're also on camera,
yeah,
and then you're like. So, where are we going from? Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but.
Wait. Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, let me get my face right. But.
The face.
The faces and gestures.
But, like, for you, like, I mean, like, I was looking at, your dad.
Yeah.
John Ritter was, like, one of the great funny guys on television.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. And also, he did some good movies. But he was, like, of a generation of actors. They just worked in television, and they were working all the fucking time.
Absolutely.
There's this whole world of TV actors that you kind of know. I mean, his second wife, Amy, too, was a TV actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but they were, like, omnipresent.
Yeah.
They were just always there.
Yeah. Well, there also were much fewer channels. So.
I know. It's kind of crazy, though, that there was this world of working actor that everybody knew.
Yeah.
Because we were all watching the same television shows.
Right, exactly.
And also that was the time where it's like, you know, when you'd see them in a movie, you'd be like, what is he doing in that?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's you know the character from TV.
Yeah.
And then when they made the jump to movie, you're like, oh, boy, I don't know how this is going to go.
I know. It's such a different world now. There's much more fluidity between those two things. But there was really, and especially in that time, like either a television actor or a film. And television actors seemed much more accessible, I think.
Yeah, because you
see them all the time.
Yeah,
and
every week.
Yeah,
there
exactly.
they are.
Yeah.
And you grew up in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember like being on the set of Three's Company? I remember
not on Three's Company. I was born in the middle of that. So
are you really young?
I was born in 80.
Right.
February 1980. And so I think it finished in 83 or 84.
So you're well into the Don Knotts period.
The first show, you know, the version of Three's Company that I became aware of
yeah.
was with, yeah, Mr. Furley and Terry.
Yeah.
Priscilla Barnes. So yeah. it was funny to then go back and
watch the other
Ropers
stuff
and stuff, which they're all, and Suzanne Summers and they're all the iterations are really fun and great, but
Mr. Roper,
but
why am I spacing that actor's name?
Norman Fell.
Oh, Fell. Yeah, Norman yeah. Fell.
And Audra Lindley, as the, you know.
Yeah. Norman Fell.
Yeah.
Do you remember him in The Graduate? I don't like
you. Oh, yeah,
you.
That's right. He's so great.
And do you know Richard Dreyfuss sticks his head in? Should I call the cops?
Oh, my gosh.
It's got one line in it.
That's so funny.
I'll call the cops.
Oh, wow.
I don't like you.
You so could weird. Really have like a simmering anger, Norman.
But
Fell.
He's like that. He was one of those guys, though. Like, you know, he started doing a little bit of movies, and he's like a TV guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was like, so funny that you go back and you see these movies, and you're like, oh my gosh!
Yeah, he was a bit player.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
like he just got the gig. I think that was the thing is that, you know, people, and I think it's still the same way. Only like a lot of people do work now that nobody gets to see ever.
I know. That's
it's hard
thing.
To find.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
people just want to work.
Right, exactly.
You know, and the idea of like nailing a series, it's rare now.
Especially this year, it's gotten so crazy.
What's going on with that? I don't know.
I don't know, but it's like there's just not a lot of work, and I'm like feel we're so super lucky to be
I know
on
that's what I
because there's so many people that just
that's like, what I keep being told because like my instinct is always like nah, I don't know if I want to do it.
No, but it's like you know every guest star who comes in is like. Whew. Man, it's dead out there.
Really?
Like, yeah, and I had a friend who's working on a lot, and he was saying like 70% of the lot is just empty, like not shooting. There's just, I think...
In L.A.,
yeah,
certainly.
The strikes and the, I think everything just...
I know, it seems...
Slowed it down.
Well, I think what the strikes proved was that, you know, the industry can figure out how to work around producing things.
Right, yeah, exactly, like, yeah.
Oh, they want more money? Fine. We're just not going to give them any more work.
Yeah, it's not a retaliation. It's just, it's,
because in Vancouver, there's like 100 things going on up there.
Geez.
Like, I didn't even know Melanie was up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My driver,
so much stuff.
Yeah. My driver said there's 60 productions going on. I'm like, what the fuck? In LA, there's nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just empty, weird ghost town studios.
Yeah, it's weird.
Where'd you shoot the Matlock?
Paramount.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The one, they just closed it, though, didn't they?
Oh, I just was reading something about
you better check if you got work to go back to.
I know. I don't know what that's about. I mean, I know that they are still working. I'm going back on Monday. So
there
at
is
least
a soundstage for you to work on?
Yes, exactly.
I thought they closed down something.
Something happened. I mean, there was a big merger.
You didn't get the memo.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you got to go to Vancouver. That might work out for you.
Yeah.
You move the production to Vancouver.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You can just move in with your wife.
Exactly. See her once a while.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing too, like when I was looking at your resume and then your old man's resume, he just said like the guest star thing was fucking huge.
Oh yeah,
that's how everyone started.
Absolutely,
he was like on the Waltons.
Yep, yeah, he was. He was the preacher on the Waltons,
and you just move him around.
Yeah, exactly.
And just, oh, there he is on the cop show,
Mary Tyler Moore show.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah. He had a Hawaii 5-0 thing.
With Jack Lord.
Yeah, I think so.
Of course.
Like, he was a hippie who's like
a hippie
has a drug dealer shootout or something. MASH. He had a bit part on MASH where he held one of the guys hostage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
But yeah, that's same with me. Like in, you know, I was in New York, and like Law and Order was the thing that was employing everybody. You know, like
yeah. So what was your arc? Where you grew up here?
I grew up here. Yeah.
And I didn't realize you kind of come from a show business family in a way. Not
yeah,
just your
yeah.
dad, but
yeah,
your
yeah.
grandfather was some kind of a country singer,
singing cowboy, yeah, in the America's Most Beloved Cowboy was like the.
Is that his thing?
That was his thing.
But you didn't
yeah.
know that guy.
No, he died before I was born. But I, you know, it was kind of incredible
dad
to
have
see
the records and stuff.
And... Oh yeah, and we saw his movies, and you know, you can hear, yeah.
And your grandmother too.
And my grandmother too. Yeah, they met on a movie called Rainbow Over the Range, where she was the librarian, and he was, you know, she was an actor, and
so they were in that studio system, like in like,
oh, yeah.
like Hail Caesar.
You yeah. Hey, oh, exactly. It's exactly like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were just cranking out. They were just going to the San Fernando Valley and just cranking out westerns.
Is that crazy?
My dad would go up to his dad and say, "Oh, I saw, you know, Mystery of the Masked Man landed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Texts would be like, which one was that? Like, they just, he was just showing up, and they were like, if you look at the IMDb in like the late 30s,
yeah.
you're like, how did you cram that many movies into one year?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they were just churning them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And all we know are the ones that get, you know, critically acclaimed, and there's right. like a 200 other ones.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly.
And it, like, you know, Cranston comes from that too. His dad was like, you know, these guys who kind of grow up in knowing that studio system, it's just these kind of utilitarian, like, actor is a job.
100%.
The job. We're doing the job.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And he's got a real working man kind of sensibility around it.
And it was only, like, you know, the entire invention and industry was only, like,
pretty young.
20 years old
yep.
or whatever.
Yep.
You know, so it wasn't like, you know, when he was born, it was like, that was probably when they were first doing movies. So the idea that he had this dream.
Who, your grandfather?
And, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
In
yeah.
East Texas, and was like, I'm going to move to New York and see if I can, you
He
know.
Went to New York?
He went to New York, and that's where he got his nickname Tex, because he was,
he
his
had
accent.
A hat.
Yeah, his yeah. hat and his accent. But yeah, he was like out in New York eating ketchup. That was like some
oh,
of
that
his
was the thing,
you know,
right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he
making
was,
the soup with the ketchup?
Yeah, yeah. Starving. Well, just, yeah, he was, that he just had, he had a huge family, and he just, but he had this dream and went for it, and.
So your dad grew up on the studio lot?
Yeah, kind of. He was out here in Studio City, Toluca Lake he grew up in. Yeah.
Wild. And then, so then you did too.
And then, yeah, and then I did too.
You grew
yeah.
up just on, you know, around the TV studios.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest, yeah.
And you got what, two brothers?
I got three brothers and a sister.
Yeah.
My older, I mean, I'm the oldest, and then my sister and my brother with my mom, and
yeah.
then my other brother from my yeah. from Amy. Yeah.
Your half brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. I met Amy recently.
Yeah, yeah.
At a, I think it was at Sarah Silverman's party.
Yeah, they're close.
Yeah, 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 yeah. She's a character. She's fun.
Yeah. She is fun. Yeah, she's very funny.
So when do you decide? Like, I mean, like, you know, growing up around it like that, and he was a big star, right? I mean,
I mean,
totally recognizable person. That's when they had like all the, you know, the TV shows that had all the stars hanging around,
yeah,
and, like,
exactly.
and all that stuff. It was Love a different hero.
Yeah, he. Yeah, he would get recognized all the time, and it was funny too, because he had this weird habit of, like, if we were in a public place,
yeah.
he would always just be kind of walking faster than, like, it would be like him maybe same pace,
yeah.
but him maybe like 10 feet or so ahead of us, and yeah. us all kind of falling. And so you would see this, like, wake of people kind of, like, turning
oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
recognizing
yeah.
him.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
he just was, that was part of the thing. He just wanted to, like, keep moving. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, he always was trying to entertain us as much as possible throughout all of those things.
Oh, yeah?
So anytime, you know, sometimes people would be, a little mean or things like that, or
oh really,
or slightly insensitive or things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He just was, you know, he.
Well, they get
didn't
excited.
Really have much of an ego about it. Yeah,
and so they, you know, it's just that there's that fine line between hey, John, you know, John Ritter.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, and so yeah, and if you just say yeah, thank you, and you start to move on, like, hey, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of, it's like, dude, what do I owe you?
Yeah, that's the complicated.
Yeah,
element.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, they'd be like,
I thought you'd be a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, I remember this one lady took his glasses off his face and went, I knew it was you, and he's like, oh, can I?
Oh my
can
God.
I have my glasses?
Just no boundaries.
Yeah, you gained some weight, things like
oh
that.
Oh my like, God! Oh,
thank you.
Because they have.
Are
that.
You still acting? and he would go, no, I have a potato farm up in. He just would make stuff up.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, oh, yeah, because there was no part of him. He was very humble, and
yeah.
you know, like he there was no part of him that was like, let me prove to the stranger that I've, you know, he never stopped working. He always was
sure,
doing
but
something.
But they only
here and
know
there.
Him from the one thing.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not going to be like, actually, yes, I'm working on this. He was just like, no, yeah, I retired. So we basically raise lambs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we slaughter them as soon as they become sheep. But, you know, he would just make up all these weird things. And
did it have, like, do you remember it having an impact on him when the show stopped?
No, I mean, I...
You're too young?
I mean, he, to me, it seemed like he was always doing something.
Oh, yeah, because,
like
he was.
After, you know, after Three's Company, there was, I mean, Three's the Crowd didn't go long, but then he was doing Hooperman and,
Hooperman.
You know, all, and then movies and just, he loved working. He was like so a workaholic and just loved that so much. And so...
when do you decide that, like, this is the thing?
I kind of, I mean, I like doing it in elementary school, and I initially was like, I think I want to.
Where'd you go to the school?
I went to Crossroads in.
Oh my God!
I know. I loved it. It was really.
I've only talked to a few people, and I've read about Crossroads. You know, it's not controversial, but it's a very specific thing, isn't it?
It is a very specific thing.
There's a lot of kids of. Industry people there, and it's kind
for
of
sure,
and it's kind of like a very loose curriculum.
Does
it still exist?
Oh yeah, it still exists, and you know, I think initially it gets a certain reputation. There are certain things about it that
like what is it exactly? Like it's for privileged. Offspring of actors.
Yeah, that's for sure part of the thing.
But who was in your class?
Oh boy,
whose kids were there? People
there
were
the. Oh yeah, there are lots of. I mean, oh gosh, I don't. It's.
Are you sworn to secrecy?
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about it. No, but it was funny because you'd see a movie on the weekend and you'd say like, oh man, that was awful. And they'd be like, oh, my dad wrote that. And they'd be like, oh shit, sorry. The writing actually was great, but it just was the rest of it.
Yeah.
I remember saying that. The writing was good.
Yeah, didn't we just say the writing was great? That was the one good thing about it. They really took that script and ruined it. But also it's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, it's a private school, so it's an expensive school. And then you have, it's sort of a industry town. So it's like if you had, you know, you that's why it sort of ends up there. And there are some freedoms about it and things like that. But then there are also I don't know. I really loved it. A lot of the things that it gets made fun of for, I greatly enjoyed. You know, there's a class where we like passed around a stick and we talked about our feelings and stuff like that.
Sure.
And that gets made fun of a lot. But then it also forced like 14 and 15 year olds to be like, I guess this is what's going on inside my heart and brain. And
so what were you learning about yourself then?
I think it was just learning how to forcing you to talk about, forcing you to articulate what you were thinking about and feeling. And
what was the hardest part about having a dad as a major celebrity?
I think it was probably figuring out my own identity. I think there was always a lot of context and
he's John Ritter's kid.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's sort of who I, was. Yeah. And so there would be times if I was like at camp or at a new school where I never would like tell anybody, but there would be a time where someone would like put it together and I would never lie about it.
Right.
So if someone asked me, I would say, yeah. And then I would notice that some people would be like much nicer to me after they found out. And I would always feel like, oh,
it's got nothing to do with me.
Out. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with me. And that was so that was sort of a strange thing to navigate in terms of like, are you liking me? It was just a strange thing to.
Yeah, it's almost like there's no way to determine whether or not you have a self in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And the self kind of disappears as soon as people learn this one fact about you.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that, okay, so you were not so nice to me, which is fine.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, it always just made the friends that I knew were my real friends feel like that much more authentic and lovely because we had created a thing just on ourselves. And then they found out, oh, cool. Or I don't know who that is, or whatever it is. But,
But it's interesting because there is this two sides to this parasocial dynamic, right? In the terms of like people know they have a relationship with your dad that's not real, mm-hmm. right? It's based on this character and familiarity and also celebrity.
Right.
But they feel like they, you know, they, and so you just represent some extension of him.
Exactly.
And they're just sort of like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm just talking, because your dad's that guy. And then you're just lost in it.
Yeah, exactly. And then it also, and then it became also a bit complicated in the, like, during the divorce times where I had, was having complicated feelings and people were like,
oh,
I love your dad. And yeah, I was like, I know he's great.
Yeah.
But I'm, I felt scary to even say like, oh, I'm a little hurt.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, I'm not, that's.
I'm not so good with him right now, but I'm happy you like him.
Yeah. I mean, I always loved him. He was always so sweet, but it's just that, He had created so much goodwill towards him and love towards him that some of my like hurt feelings, I was like, these have to be like mine privately. Cause I also didn't want to like ruin, you know, anybody or like taint
idea
even.
Of him.
Yeah. Like, and I enjoyed and appreciated, you know, all of that.
People's love created. For him.
Yeah, exactly.
But your private life and your relationship with what was going on, you know, it wasn't public.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that, well, now, that was also a different time, man. Like, because now everybody knows everything about everybody.
Oh,
and there's like,
oh,
you know, 100 stories, you know, like there's just people on the edge of their seats wondering about, you know, Ben and Jennifer and like,
wow. Oh, yeah.
And there's no way, everyone's speculating. There's so much bullshit out there. But at least at the time you were growing up, it was still able to be relatively private.
Yeah. I mean, in that time, it feels like, I don't know, in that world, if there was some like scandal or something, it'd be like, there's a National Enquirer article coming out, so just wait for a month.
Right.
And then like, there's no chat rooms, it doesn't
nothing.
Keep, the conversation
maybe
doesn't keep
Entertainment
going.
Tonight, like when they started doing that show.
One story,
and
then like, it's kind of, they all
now
move
it's like
on to
a
the
month's
next.
News, month's
oh,
worth
yeah.
of news.
And everybody weighing in and detectives and all this stuff.
So but, when you're growing up, are there, like, because I always wonder, like, did you know Don Knotts?
I met Don Knotts, and I loved Don Knotts. But I didn't really, like, by the time, I was sort of a little sentient person, I hadn't seen him.
Did your dad hang out with actors?
Sometimes. I mean, you know, who he was working with, or, but his closest friends, the ones that I saw the most were like one of his friends from high school and the rest from college. Like they just were always
that's sort of like you're talking about. Like, you know, you build the real relationships and they're the ones that kind of stay around.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny too, because there are so many things. I'll go back and I'll find some article about, like, you know, when my dad was first starting out and reading him answering these questions about his dad and all of these things.
Right.
There's all these weird.
When he was a kid?
Yeah. Or when he was like in the Waltons or whatever.
Right.
You know,
Right. Like People Magazine kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And sort of the remembering that he also existed within a context of
the shadow of a famous father.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because there was a woman that came up to me, a couple of years ago, and was like, you were at a restaurant in 1982 and you were a nightmare. I was like, oh my, and that's the weird kind of context of like, you would never remember.
Dad.
Yeah. You would never remember my bad behavior as a if I was just like a screaming, running around 2-year-old in a restaurant, you wouldn't remember. But the fact that because it was my dad, you've carried around for 40 years that he had a bad son one day.
An obnoxious
infant. Yeah, exactly.
And that's you.
And that's me.
And she
and
felt
I brought
like she,
shame on my dad, and she must have thought he was a terrible father. And,
oh,
you know,
my God.
Or she didn't say any of that stuff. But that kind of thing where people will remember things, or there's always a sense that if I really messed up, I could bring shame onto the
family name. Onto your nice dad.
And my grandpa, and just sort
oh
of
my
tank
God.
The whole
this third generation of Ritter really fucking sunk the family name.
Exactly.
This kid, he had it all going for him.
Exactly.
But he had to act like a regular kid and ruin it.
Exactly.
So you were aware of that possibility of shame?
Especially like as a teenager or something like that, you know.
So that's wild because like it's not, and it's a different thing, you know, like if your dad was like, there, I think it has to do with movie actors versus TV actors, is that there, you had a whole generation or two of people that, you know, had a weekly relationship with this guy.
Right.
So they knew him like he was a part of their family.
Well, and also he had created in the TV world and in the real world so much goodwill and being so kind to people. Yeah, and I still get stories of like, he did this nice thing for me. He didn't know me, but I was at a Starbucks and he, I don't know, did something nice.
So you got to be careful, even if you're mad at your dad over something that happened that day, who you're talking about. Can't be like, that fucking asshole, he took my thing away.
And it's
like,
ungrateful.
Yeah. Because then somehow or another it would trickle into...
Exactly. How's Crossroads?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not complaining about any of it, but it was interesting.
Did you ever talk to him about it?
I talked to him a lot about it, and he had a very, I think because he watched his dad go through all of this, he was able to sort of avoid a lot of the kind of the pitfalls of, I think that was what kept him sort of humble and just sort of like, or you know, he would always say like, we're so lucky, you know.
Yeah,
like there, and just this sense of, as opposed to some people who have a certain level of success and they're like, it's because I'm the best,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
He, even though I think he was so brilliant, and
well, that's pretty undeniable. Yeah,
but he, you know, he was, there's like, there was this understanding in the sense of like, there are incredibly talented, amazing people who just don't catch the break. And so he was very much like,
well, you know, I talk to people about that a lot, you know, and certainly because there's been kind of this framing of nepotism, babies and all that. But I still, you know, there's some part of it that seems disingenuous to me in terms of the critique of it, because like, look, man, if you grow up in the world, how are you not going to think that like, I want to get a job in this world?
Yeah. I mean, I think that conversation has been so interesting and I see a lot of people who have benefited from nepotism really pushing back, because I think one of the things that scares them about the whole conversation is like this idea that their accomplishments or their talent is being taken away from them or something.
Right. They're
like
not
that
talented. It's all, you know, you got to be able to do the job after a certain point.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like there's that much goodwill in show business that like, you know, this kid sucks.
Let but him keep he's, ruining yeah, project yeah. after project.
He's Ritter's kid. What are we going to do? Yeah. Give him the, you know, supporting role. We'll see what happens.
We loved his dad. Yeah. But I think by being so scared of having that taken away from him, they're not acknowledging the privilege.
Right.
They're like that part of like, oh sure, it got me in the door, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
But they're skipping over that part, which is like, that is a big thing. There are
sure,
so many
you do
people
have,
who
right.
like,
yeah,
who,
yeah.
you know, that's the hardest part is that first part. And so, yes, you don't get to like, you know, continue to ruin projects.
Right.
And, you know, and there are a lot of children who have a really tough time, you know, like breaking into the same
sure.
business, or they get a chance and then that's it. But I feel like there was a lot of, when I was reading some of the responses, there was a lot of like, well, no, I'm, you know, I think it's a thing that a lot of people want. Everyone wants to feel like they worked hard and they earned what they have done.
But also it's like a very small percentage of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of, and the ones that don't get flack are ones who end up, you know, behind the cameras or in production roles or whatever.
Right, right.
And that's just business.
Well, and
it's just like, it's show business. So your dad's a producer and, you know, you're going to go work in the office and it's like, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Well, it is funny how it seems to be focused on this industry where like, it feels like I would be more concerned about it in
banking,
like politics or banking, yeah,
sure.
or, you know,
sure.
or doctors or,
yeah,
I mean, it doesn't happen.
I mean, like, look at, you know, like, RFK Jr.
Right, exactly.
What a train wreck of a Kennedy that is.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. People just assume, like, he's a Kennedy. They don't go like, this fucking Nepo baby.
Right, exactly. It's a strange thing.
I imagine
thing
some people are doing
that's
that.
That's focused on sort of this entertainment industry.
Yeah, because there's a... It kind of plays into the Hollywood entitlement to whole thing.
And there is a lot of entitlement.
Sure. And then there's the other side of it, which is like it's not fair.
And that's the thing that I think the people who have benefited are too scared to admit.
Right.
That they're actually it is like a little bit not fair. And I remember having like these conversations with my dad because I was very aware of that, and that idea, even before like that whole thing was a term, the idea of like getting a part and everybody knowing, especially when I wasn't so confident in my own abilities at the start, getting a part and everyone on the set going, well, we know how he got that. And then if I was terrible on top of that.
Yeah.
So when I was first starting out, I was really determined to either succeed or fail on my own terms and not accept anything. And then even if you do that, there still is an element of, help that it gets, like even just going into an audition and people being like, oh, he was so nice. That helps me a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
Even helps me not be as nervous. But I remember like my dad was like, yeah, okay, absolutely. And then
you wanted to act.
Yeah. And when I, but I got like a Law and Order or something, he's like, okay, great. You want to be in this movie with me? And I was like, no, not yet. I didn't realize that there was a limited amount of time, to do that. But it still was such an embarrassing thing to me to think of being somewhere that I hadn't at least
earned.
Yeah. And just being that guy, like, I watched all the 80s movies. I saw all the like rich kid camps and and you're like, oh, these are the bad guys. I really tried to kind of avoid that as much as possible. And people get cast in things that they're just not ready for.
Sure.
Yet.
Oh, yeah.
And then they embarrass themselves. And then that's the end of their career because they haven't. Because
they took the shot. They felt like they had to.
Yeah.
I was fortunate that I was never really afforded the shot. And I just had to scrape and, be persistent and figure out a way around that.
Right. And get good enough to forge your own. Yeah.
I'm still not really that confident about it. But there was not I did it the old fashioned way. Complete persistence and anger.
Yes,
eventually,
exactly.
And then somehow making a life out of my garage.
Exactly. That's pretty incredible.
I thought it was over. But the layers of insecurity.
For sure.
That you're dealing with, first being protective of your dad's reputation just in life.
Yeah.
And having to kind of suck all that up. And then, not knowing who you were because you were always identified as, Ritter's kid. And then deciding, that's always a big decision. Like the one that stands out in my mind more than other things for some reason is like, Jacob Dylan.
A lot
of things you can do, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to pick up guitar?
I know.
I mean, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And he's great.
He's great. He's totally great.
And he's an intense guy, and he's a good guy, and I like his music. But, I mean, just the idea of, like, I'm just going to step into that shadow.
All the comparisons. I remember the first time I did the only time I did a sitcom, because I felt like I had somewhat sidestepped some of the, direct comparisons and earlier stuff.
Right.
I ended up thinking comedy auditions. I was so nervous that I was just literally shaking.
Yeah.
That I didn't get a lot of those parts initially. So I ended up getting the
more serious
stuff. But then when I did a sitcom, it was like all my insecurities just piled on. And it was actually only a couple years after he had passed. And I remember. It was called The Class, and there was a lot of incredible actors on it, and people who have gone on to do so many amazing things. But
how long did that run?
One season.
Okay,
or not even one season. 19 episodes, I think.
Well, that's also the benefit of some of these things. It's like, yeah, I never saw that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, we watch it and we take it apart. What went wrong? Yeah. But I remember like in the first like press tour or whatever. Yeah.
Junket.
The questions were so intense. And
in relation to your dad?
Yeah. And I think it was also because I still was sort of coping with, you know, the loss and things like that. And then, you know, ping-ponging back and forth between like, are you having fun on set? And do you miss your dad?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, of course.
And so in that first like press tour, there was like an open bar situation and I kept on getting, getting more and more and more. And then like the next day when I woke up, the next like week, I was like Googling like my name, drunk.
Say?
Yeah. Like what, you know, embarrassment, I never saw anything. So, but it was, you know,
you handled it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it only took me 10 more years to stop drinking.
Was that your thing?
Oh, yeah. I think there was a lot of my insecure. I was kind of tight in certain ways. I felt like I had to sort of behave or do this thing. And so alcohol was my way to get out
loosen
of my
it up.
Insecurities. And then I took it too far.
Well, the insecurities, though, what's interesting is the evolution of the, you know, the layers of insecurity, because, you know, you spend your life in the shadow of your dad and being sort of an appendage publicly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you got to keep all that shit to yourself. And then, you know, just by virtue of that, you don't really get to develop a sense of self.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now you're taking these opportunities and now you're comparing yourself to other actors who have a harder time of it and your own talent and wondering if that's real.
100%.
Are you taking parts that play to your insecurities?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the hardest thing for, like, the hardest auditions for me were the sort of confident, you know, like leading guy, you know, like I was like, I don't quite know how to do this, but you give me like a guy who's insecure, who's looking at other men or peers, you know, guys for like how to be a
right
man or how to be a person. Like, absolutely. I will, like the best friend.
I can method that shit.
Yeah, for sure. And
well, that's interesting though, because that's not a bad approach, because if you have the fundamental talent to be present to act, to have a wheelhouse isn't bad. But when it's indicative of your you know, bigger problems in terms of being a person, it seems like it could exacerbate the situation.
I mean, 100%. Every once in a while I would fool someone in an audition into thinking that I was like a confident guy, and then, you know, and get the part, and then just the whole movie or whatever, I'd be like, how did I do that? Why did I do this? This is not how.
But were you able to step up though and do the acting?
I hope so. I mean, I gave it my best, and
what was that role? Were you first
that
remember that
role
happened?
Was the first time I remember that happened was this movie called The Education of Charlie Banks.
Yeah,
and it's basically I play this like. It's gonna sound silly when I say it, but I basically play like a New York tough.
Yeah,
like a very violent. Guy who like hates rich people and will beat them up to like level the playing field and there was a lot that I understood about that, like I had a lot of anger. I also have a lot of like over the top feelings about entitlement and rich people, you know.
Sure.
Like there's a certain thing that does drive me crazy, so there's a lot about that character that I understood.
And then there's also the self-hatred component
there's a huge part of that. And the only thing was like violence is like my last resort to solve a problem. But I've also met a couple guys whose it's like number three.
Yeah.
You know? So, So I had to sort of figure that stuff out.
That's like a good acting exercise.
It was great. I had a really great time and I met a lot of amazing actors, and I am proud of that movie. But it is, it's bizarre. I feel like sometimes I see it and I'm, or I'll see like a clip and I'll be like, I can't really remember how I, what I was doing.
It's interesting when you have to, you know, and I don't like, you know, you've done a lot of stuff and like there's sometimes where I'm cast in the few things that I've been in where I don't understand why they cast me. You know, where it's sort of like, there's like a million character, you know, get a guy that's like this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'll try to talk my way out of doing it.
I've done that.
You know, where it's like, I don't know what, and then all of a sudden, if they're good at making the choice, whether it's casting director or the director, of like convincing you that they want you.
Right,
you
exactly.
Agents, you can't rely on for that. But if you...
Yeah, but if they're
because saying, they're like, we got to get the, it's like, it's a job.
Yeah, yeah. So...
But if the director kind of sits you down and goes, no, it's essentially the shame that we're looking for. I'm like, oh well, so you do know me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, or, well, no, yeah that I really love is when you
they get you.
Yeah, and they're saying, no, you don't have to put on a thing.
Right.
We know what you can do, and this is what there's an element of your personality or what you bring to a part that we want for this.
Yeah, that's, and then you're like, okay, I believe you.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
Yeah, that sort of happened in this movie that I'm also really proud of called The Tale, which is a super dark but beautiful movie.
What was the story on that one?
The story, it's a true story of the.
So that's this, pretty recently.
Yeah, pretty recently. Jennifer Fox wrote and directed it, and was a documentary filmmaker, but this is her first narrative film, and it was essentially about the adult man who groomed her when she was a child, and her kind of realizing, going through that thing of realizing, oh, this wasn't like my first boyfriend,
right?
And I wasn't just mature for my age. I was a child, and he was a sick person.
Yeah.
But the fact that she realized it, you know, in her 40s, I think.
Yeah.
Part of the grooming was that they wanted someone who felt like warm and kind and loving, and that it was a very, you know, even though there was all sorts of manipulation and sickness going on, that in the moment to this little girl, it could feel like, oh, we were in a relationship, and the world wouldn't understand.
But, yeah.
So that was really scary.
A dark part.
It was super dark.
And you felt like you got in there?
To a certain extent. There was a lot of, you know, I was really mainly concerned. Everyone was really mainly concerned about, like, how we were going to do this and shoot it and not... I basically spent most of my thoughts and time trying to sort of protect this little actress who was playing Jennifer when she was a kid.
Yeah.
And so I just tried to like make jokes, and I was like a, you know, like a basically goofy uncle energy around
off when you're not shooting.
Yeah. So that she felt comfortable and she didn't feel like, you know, and none of the weird, there was body doubles for all of the very creepy stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to say anything weird to her or anything like that.
Yeah.
We like cut it all up.
And, yeah.
But
you took a chance on the part.
Yeah, and it only really like hit me one time where we were just sort of running lines with her. I was, you know, her and her mom, we were just doing the scene, and she just was sitting there, and she was like, you know, 11 or something like that. And all of a sudden, like, she was like a little cold, and so she was just... And she, all of a sudden, I just saw like how small she was, and the reality of the whole situation crashed down on me.
Yeah.
I like had to go into the other room and just sort of cry for a little bit. But but for the most part, I was able to just kind of trust the whole the director and the other actors
and also I guess to sort of play it. Without that awareness.
Yes, exactly. And just to be like, I'm just, as long as she's having fun and she feels safe, you know, and it ends up, you know, with, when it's all cut together, it ends up being
what it's supposed to be, which is this sort of awful thing where, of course, a child wouldn't recognize that's right. what's going sure. on is abuse.
Yeah. And I guess that character probably didn't either, really.
Yeah. He had he created his own right. worldview yeah, that like yeah. this was normal and, you know, like, well, another country, whatever, and sure, all that
sure.
stuff.
And, yeah, yeah.
And but I also felt like it was important because I feel like there's so many, you know, I mean, people who do that to children yeah. are monsters, but yeah. there's not a lot of understanding of like the manipulation and the confusion
how it plays
that
out.
It can. Yeah. Yeah. And so it felt like I wanted to show that, you know, I wanted to be part of showing
that
part.
How was that received?
It was received pretty well. I mean, and people really felt like seen by it. I think there were a lot of people that right. came up afterwards. And then like, maybe a year ago, there was a moment where people were circulating the worst clip on Twitter.
Yeah.
And obviously people who hadn't seen the movie and were just going, they're trying to normalize, you know, pedophilia, right. sure, Hollywood, sure. all this stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is my absolute nightmare. And it's also, yeah, like I said, it's the worst scene in the movie, the one that would just make me like, I'd have to like, I'd scrunch down in my seat and just sweat and
yeah,
just
yeah.
wait for it to be done.
How long did that go on for?
It went on for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And there was a time where it was frustrating because I wanted to be like,
see the whole movie.
Yeah, well, and also like, what creep fast forwarded to this scene?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's the only way you wouldn't like know what the
totally out of
thing
context.
Is. Yeah, 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 yeah. So somebody, whoever pulled that out, was fast forwarding to the creepy scenes of that movie, which is even creepier than anything.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, but it was just weird to be like, you know, have all these people again, like your father would be turning in your grave. Like, yeah, if I was trying to normalize pedophilia, yes, my father would be upset with me. But
this is a story about
not.
A woman who's trying to you know, shed light on the subtle horror of the process.
Exactly. And it was such a beautiful and subtle script that walked a tightrope really well.
I'm sorry you had to go through that.
But yeah, it was weird to just see this like misguided hatred.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, coming.
Well,
right
it was
at me.
Intentional guided hatred.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yes.
Misguided guided.
Yeah. But I mean, like, do you feel that? So that was just 2018. So, and you've done like so much stuff. So you feel like, you know, you're kind of, it's good to feel like you're still evolving as an actor and also, you know, taking those chances.
Absolutely.
And when you were drinking, when did that start?
That started when I was in high school. I mean, that was like, you know, my friends and I were the little like long haired, you know, kind of crazy guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Partiers.
Yeah. I mean, not really out in the world, but like in our little bubble,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
like
high
four
school
of
shit.
Us
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
getting in the liquor cabinet and stuff like that.
And it just kind of never went away.
And it never, I mean, like, I think I threw up or got really sick maybe like my second time. Like there were a lot of like warning signs.
Yeah, I was a puker too.
Oh gosh. So many, it's just so many parties ended with me in the
me
bathroom
too.
Again. Yeah.
And I always thought it was because like I didn't really like beer and it was too filling. So I'd drink hard liquor and I'd be fucked.
I tried so many different titles. Like the reason it happened for the 90th time was because I did it out of order or whatever it was. Like I made so many excuses, but I'm coming up on 11 years with no alcohol.
Wow. So, that's great, man.
Yeah, thanks.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I think what I never really understood about it was that in like after a couple of years of not drinking, I realized that there were certain elements of myself that I just believed to be absolutely true flaws that will never get fixed or something, or a certain level of out of control that just cutting out alcohol and, you know, and also doing like some work on myself and stuff. I was like, oh, maybe that's not true.
Right.
Maybe, maybe that was,
you could see it.
Yeah. Like, or there was a seed of that there that is exacerbated by alcohol.
Sure.
But without the alcohol, it stays a little seed or something. Like I can control it, or I'm not, you know, I'm not just like floating along
the tide of the world. Did you do a recovery guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you were able to do the work and sort out you know, through the steps, like the, you know, character defects and your side of things.
And, yes, exactly.
And then you get that brilliant kind of profile of, you know, which of those character defects are driving you.
Yeah.
And then you have sort of a map to do the other work, you know, in therapy or whatever.
Right, right, exactly.
And kind of like put it together, like where it came from.
Oh yeah, which is just so fascinating because it's like you're sort of like your own little puzzle or like escape room where that's the code that I needed for this lock.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's that amazing thing, and I talk about it publicly, and if it bothers you, you can tell me because I know you're supposed to be anonymous, but we're helping people here.
Yeah,
but that fourth step, man. I mean, if you do that thoroughly, it's sort of like, no, that's who I am.
Yeah,
these are the things. The character defects that drive me. And a lot of times it's not being an asshole. It's the opposite, where you just suck it up or take the hit.
Well, that there was a lot of...
Self-centered fear.
Yes, there was a lot of that for me. And there was a lot of, just sort of confusing and conflicting thoughts. And, you know, I think I made a lot of decisions about... who I wanted to be as a man when I was like 10 or 11
right.
and like, you know, watching my parents' marriage fall apart. I was like, well, here's what I'm never going to do. Here are the kinds of things. And just making all these decisions before I had an understanding of who I was.
Sure.
So then I was living this life and having these other things come into my brain and being like, well, I just ignore all that. And then the alcohol would kind of like explore, you know, those types of things. And so it just was, you know, it was a lot of, I don't know, I had to kind of, when you've created your persona and there's an element of like protecting it from the outside world and protecting your family or all these things, and you're trying to ignore all the...
You've instinctually done it. It's not like you don't make choices about that persona.
No,
it's done to protect you.
Yeah, like if I show a break in the armor, it can be exploited in ways that I didn't want to, like just circle the wagons.
And then the only way out becomes like, you know, when you drink, you're sort of like, you're not that self-conscious.
That was exactly it.
Right.
Yeah. And
you get a relief from yourself.
Yes, but then... If I then did something that made me feel like shameful, it would just be, you know, the next day I would just go into like a spiral.
And, yeah, it's like you can't win because, you know, you're instinctively, you know, getting relief from it through the booze, and then that makes you act a certain way, and then you get to wake up and beat the shit out of yourself more than you usually do.
Yeah, exactly.
Just without the booze, you're already operating at a level of shame and self-abuse.
Exactly.
And then when your persona that's built on alcohol is out in the world, and then the next day you're like, oh, fucking double asshole. Like, and it's almost like you're being dragged by this other... thing, which is the booze.
Absolutely. And it's like, you know, and for a while it felt like a, like, you know, almost like Jekyll and Hyde or something like that. But then you're like, no, that's like both me. And so you like you have to kind of like, you know, I think now I have, instead of just like ignoring all the bad stuff or putting it aside or sweeping it under the rug, I'm like, it exists with me. I carry a low level amount of shame just all the time.
Sure. It's a hard one to kick if you're brought up a certain way, if you're wired for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you can integrate the other things and kind of make choices. Like that's the real benefit of sobriety is that you realize you can, you know, make different choices.
That's the biggest part. And that was the thing that was the scariest for me is there were so many times where I felt like I'm not making these choices. Yeah. I'm not in control. So, you know, and I think like after my relationship with Mariana ended, I felt like, you know, when I was 19 and I met her, I was like, here's my thing from my childhood. You're my person, one person for my whole life.
Yeah.
It's you and me, you know, like we'll just work through everything. I'm not going to like cut and run or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, like trying to hold on to all of that. And I think
you're still drinking?
Oh, yeah. And then even after we ended, I think there was an element with the alcohol and the fact that like 11 years later, I was like, I can't make good on any of those promises
right.
anymore. Like, yeah. We're separating.
You were there that long?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was like...
But you had to do it to save your sanity and life somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I had a lot of growing to do, but... when I was out in the world, you know, and even in the beginning of my relationship with Melanie,
yeah.
I was like, let me just tell you something about myself. I can't promise anything beyond right now.
Yeah.
Because I already have promised someone the big things and I didn't make good on them. So I am a flawed, I will never be able to like.
When did your dad pass during like?
My dad passed kind of early on.
With Mariana?
With Mariana. Yeah. Like with, I guess, 4 years, 4 years into our relationship.
And that was completely out of nowhere that happened.
That was completely out of nowhere. But one thing that I like, am just so grateful to Mariana about is that, you know, her father had Huntington's disease, yeah. which is this awful
yeah.
disease. And so, you know, she really inspired me when I felt like I had all the time in the world. She
right.
she was like, talk to your dad about the stuff that's bothering you. And I was like, and she's like, I wish I could talk to my dad about the stuff, you know, about my stuff. I can't because he's ill. So,
yeah.
So she kind of spurred me to like create a more honest relationship with my dad and like get brave and call him yeah. and be like, I want to, you know, talk about, I know it was complicated because he was always so fun,
yeah.
but I had stuff that I wanted to talk
serious
to him about.
Stuff,
and so
yeah.
he would come over and I would be like, today's the day that I'm going to like, yeah, and then we'd yeah, like yeah. laugh the whole time and yeah. even I'd be like, fuck. So I did that. Like I had like an amazing, like kind of
you got
conversation
some
with
honesty
my,
and closure yeah, and I was about like, your feelings.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't want you to feel like you have to hide stuff. I'm not mad anymore. I just want to know who you are and I want you to know who I am. And I want you to feel like you can tell me things.
Right.
And it really changed our relationship.
Wow.
And then he passed like a year or two later.
Wow.
So if I hadn't done it then, I wouldn't have had that chance. So,
yeah.
I just feel very grateful to her for that. But I,
but you're able to sort of, you know, kind of go through the impact of who he was and the divorce and all that stuff and who you are with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
But I also think there was an element of like, you know, a lot of my intense sort of feelings about love and sex and
yeah.
marriage and all this stuff was like, I'm going to show my dad how, you know, you can do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
when he was gone, it was like, ooh,
who am I showing?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, what if I live for a very long time?
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
As I also had some weird thought, like, maybe I'll die early.
Yeah.
For some reason, I had the weird thing about that. And then when I didn't... I was like, oh, so I got to look at some of this
stuff. You got to learn how to live.
yeah.
yeah, yeah,
because,
yeah.
like, sometimes, you know, people who pass early, it's like you see, like, the beauty of their life is
sure.
what becomes so apparent.
Because it's finite.
Because it's finite. And yeah. so there was an element of, like, if I just ignore all this stuff until I reach the finish line,
yeah.
people will go like, oh, like,
yeah.
hey, wow, he really, you know.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, okay. I'm still alive and I better start looking at some of this
yeah.
shit.
Well, how long after he died did you stop drinking?
Oh, boy. Okay, so...
Did it exacerbate
10 years.
It? Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So did it send you off on a spiral? Did it intensify?
It definitely did at yeah. first. So like, yeah. you know, and I mean, yeah, I, you know, I mean, you know as well as anybody, like, grief is such a
yeah
wild...
It's fucking... It's like, it's mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing.
And I mean, I couldn't imagine, like, the intensity of just losing a parent so, you know, quickly and at a very young age. I mean, he was in his 50s. It's crazy.
Yeah, 54, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's just absolutely insane. And it was like, you know, I got a call, like, you know, come to the hospital, but, you know, we caught it or whatever. And I was like, oh, whew.
Yeah.
And right. I remember going to the hospital and being like, okay, this is going to be like the beginning of a new chapter.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
yeah.
And then just, no, that's it. Like, and then like being like, wait, what was the last time I saw, what was the last conversation we had?
You know, like, it's like that first year or two, it's like the worst.
Yeah. You can't even like, the absence of a rewind button becomes so apparent. Like the time marching forward.
Yeah.
When all you want is just like to go, just to go like to yesterday.
Yeah. 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 Like, yeah, it like your brain can't even manage it for as long as it takes.
Yeah.
Like it's just sort of like, what?
And the that like, you know, the weird bargaining part, which is so, it's such a human and beautiful and also sad thing where you're, there's just no room. Like there's so many things in life where you make a mistake or you can sort of barter or you can explain or you can talk or you can, you know, but the, just the finality there's nothing.
Yeah. It's all in you now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all one-sided.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no, you're just dealing with,
oh my God. You know. And how did everybody, like the family get pretty tight and, you know, come together a bit?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think, I mean, the first night I saw my mom and my stepmom in the same room was at the hospital that night.
Oh, yeah. And, your mom was an actress, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's amazing. She's, but I think,
but
you
they
know,
never, they never.
They didn't, no, yeah. Yeah. And then, and now they like, you know, they just work together for months to help my uncle, my dad's brother, Tom, who has cerebral palsy and is such an amazing guy, but they both helped him like move. They like worked together to like,
oh yeah,
you know, things that I could not have even imagined in my childhood. I was like, wow, you guys, good job.
Dude, are the, because I know Amy has the foundation, right?
Yeah, yeah, Amy has a foundation. And
is your mom involved in that?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, she helps and she supports, but it's definitely like Amy's thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, man. And now you did it. You got sober. You got a kid of your own.
Yeah.
And it's going all right?
It's going great. I mean, I can't, I, you know, that was another thing I just sort of believed about myself. I was like, there's no possible way that I could be responsible enough to be a father or whatever.
Because I remember when I talked to Melanie years ago, I think it was before you guys were, maybe just at the beginning. I don't think you guys were together when I talked to her on the podcast.
We were together, but there was, you
pretty
know, I can't remember if I was still drinking or if I was just newly sober.
Well, yeah, because I remember we talked about codependency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And there was, I think Melanie and I, if we hadn't met exactly when we met in our like healing journeys of ourselves,
right.
I don't think we would have
survived it
because I don't think if she was a little healthier, I don't think she would have put up with my bullshit. And I think if I was, or I don't even know. I mean, I just feel so.
Well, you had the companion recovery thing. Like you both had, you had the symbiotic issues.
Yes.
That define, you know, alcoholic relationships.
Exactly.
And you were both, you know, hitting the recovery point at the same time.
Yes.
So it became very immediate, but you were dedicated to, you know, recovery. And you were able to find the language to do it.
Well, and I think, you know, in for my recovery, the codependence initially actually was partly what saved me because I, at that point in my life where I met her and when we were starting our relationship, I didn't really realize it at the time.
Yeah.
But looking back, I was super like depressed and really down on myself and just was like, I'm a nightmare. Why would anybody want to be with me?
Yeah.
And so getting sober, I didn't really care about it because I was on a self-destructive kick.
Yeah.
And I wasn't worth like saving or something.
Right. Well, that's that inverted self-centeredness that they talk about. Like either you're the best thing in the world or you're the piece of shit at the center of the universe.
Exactly.
But both of them are just the two sides.
Yeah, exactly.
Of self-centeredness.
Exactly. And so it was basically when Melanie said, "You can keep drinking, but I can't be with you if you're drinking."
Yeah.
She was worth giving that a shot, giving sobriety a shot. I knew that she deserved that from me. I didn't feel like I kind of...
Right. Oh, I see. So I was, initially you weren't necessarily doing it for yourself.
Yeah. I was trying to showing her I do take this seriously. Yeah. I do think you're amazing. I think probably I'll get sober and we'll work through all this stuff and you'll go, okay, well, you're not great.
So you're already trying to trick yourself into drinking still.
For sure. There was a part of it that was if we break up, then I gave it a shot, and then I can go back to my self-destructing. But it was a really incredible thing. And, you know, everyone was telling me at the beginning of my sobriety, you know, everybody has different kind of rules of what works for them.
Sure.
And so one of the things is you got to do it for yourself. You can't do it for anybody else. Yeah. You know, you can't have it be dependent. And I was like, but for me right now, this person is worth doing it for.
I started
this
the same way.
Not. Right. Oh, really?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I was married. I was, not happy. I was, using, fairly secretly because I'd already tried to get sober before. I met a woman. It was not the greatest of situations, but I was so taken with her and she was sober. So she got me sober.
Wow.
You know, I kind of wanted to do it. And, but once it was sort of this is how you're going to be with this person.
Right, right.
You're going to get sober.
Yes, exactly.
So I was compelled because I was so in love with her to be sober.
Absolutely.
And,
same.
I'm glad you survived because you're so untethered. I was just horrendous.
Yeah.
Because I didn't trust anybody. I hated myself. I was angry and emotionally abusive. And, I just wore her out. That's why they tell you don't have a relationship in the first year.
Well, that was the other thing.
But I was like, fuck that.
I know. Yes.
But I became a monster and that relationship, ended. And it took me a while to realize it was completely the right thing for her to do. But out of all that, I did stay sober.
That's amazing.
But that's
the hard transition, though, from for somebody else to yourself, because in order to stay sober, you have to have some, at least one okay feeling about yourself, or at least that you're worth not.
Well, then it becomes just the day count.
You're just sort of
like, I did another day. Like, I was not going to let go of that fucking.
That's true. I mean, that was the hardest part for me is when you're a week or 2 weeks in, you're like, well, I can get back here in 2 weeks.
I'll just have a thing.
But you're now at this point where I'm almost at 11 years, the idea of throwing that all away.
A lot of people don't talk about it. And I mean, I just had 25 years, so I don't.
Oh, that's
I don't,
incredible.
But I don't think about it the same way because I just, it's my life and I don't think about drinking.
Yeah.
But there is that thing. It's sort of like, I'm not going to be one of those guys, man. I put this fucking time together. I'm not going to fight. It was competitive.
Yeah. I mean,
because you see people go down.
For sure. After decades.
Sure.
People...
Well, that, I know. I got to make sure I keep that in mind. But the thing is you also realize that component of the disease, which is awful, but there is this sort of, I think at first you're not seeing it's tragic. You're just sort of like, I'm still winning.
Right. He was ahead of me and now he's behind.
if that's what keeps it going, fuck it.
That's true. I mean, it is crazy to me, because I remember just being the guy with the fewest days in all the rooms.
It's just crazy. And you're crazy and you're self-pitying.
Oh, yeah.
And you just can't shut up about yourself.
And I was one of those guys who was everyone's like, hey, I'm this, I'm an alcoholic. And I'd be like, I'm Jason. We'll see. I don't know if I am or not. You're here for some reason.
Exactly. That guy.
I can't. Yeah. I don't know if I'm an alcoholic.
Right, right.
I'm definitely not as bad as you.
Yeah.
Just doing all those kinds of things of all right, well, I never did that. So I must not be so bad.
I think the codependency, your natural codependency probably saved you.
I think so.
Because you grew up with it, constantly kind of concerned about your behavior's impact on your old man.
And everybody, yeah.
Because there's a different type of, because I'm as codependent as I am alcoholic for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're just sort of like, fuck everything, that's a different thing.
That is a different thing. Yeah.
You know, but if you're selfish enough to think that you can change or manage other people, you know, I think that component of it sometimes helps sobriety.
Absolutely. I think
living for somebody else.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Well, it's like, it's one of those things where I feel like I had so much more empathy for anybody else except for me.
Right.
Like I had such a high standard for myself that I was never reaching.
Right. Right.
And, but I could at least try to
show up. For
yeah.
People.
Show up yeah, and not, yeah. or not actively do more damage.
Right.
You know,
right.
To
yeah.
The people that I
That's good.
Cared about. But.
So when did you have the kid? How sober were you?
Let's see. So I think I was about 5 or 6 years sober.
That's good.
Yeah. Five years sober. 'Cause she's 5 now. And six. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You did it.
I did it.
and you work all the time and it's good.
It's good. I feel, I mean, it's been amazing to, you know, Melanie really works all the time. I've been working pretty steadily, but it's been incredible to see her just like, actually not stop and this like incredible time and
she finally, you know, like really got her time, her day.
Exactly.
Because for years everyone was like, she's the best, like she's so fucking good.
Yeah
And then it's just this thing happened where it's just the perfect showcase for what she does.
Absolutely.
She's always been great
Yeah, it's exciting to see like new people realize and then have like, you know, fans of Yellow Jackets or whatever go back
and
be like, oh, she was this good when she was 15.
I know.
I mean,
I know, it's
you know,
crazy.
Like it's
when I got to act with her, I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous.
she's amazing.
Yeah.
And just the loveliest person.
Well, I'm happy for you guys.
Thank you.
Well, maybe I'll get your number in, because if you're going to go up there, maybe we can all hang out.
That would be awesome.
Because I'll be up there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Great talking to you, man.
Yeah. Great talking to you, too. That was so fun.
There we go. Great guy. Pleasure talking to him. Matlock premieres this Sunday on CBS. Hang out for a minute, folks. Okay, Full Marin listeners, if you're interested in what I find funny, we put up a bonus episode this week trying to get to the bottom of it. It's called What Makes Mark Laugh. When I was a kid, you know, I remember being just shit crazy over that first season of SNL. I mean, I must have been 13. My parents would let me stay up to watch it. I would go to school the next day and do pratfalls like Chevy Chase. You know, I was in. You know, mm-hmm. And then I remember watching Monty Python's Flying Circus and thinking it was like from another planet.
You liked it?
I think I thought it was weird. But like, I didn't really understand what I was watching. I was young because it was around the same time, and that would show up on PBS. And then, you know, when I was a kid and my brother and I would, listen to comedy records, you know, there was definitely like a rotation of listening to that Class Clown album by George Carlin, the Cheech and Chong records we used to do. We used to act them out. We used to, I'd listen to, I remember the first time I saw Richard Pryor live in concert when I was in high school, and it had just come out, was at 78 or something. And my buddy Dave and I went to see it at a midnight movie, and I lost my shit. So, you know, there was that. And then there was also, you know, the Woody Allen stuff had a profound impact on me. Mostly, I think the first Woody Allen movie I ever saw was that the one that he didn't write, or the one that he didn't direct. It was Played Again, Sam.
Played Again, Sam?
Yeah. There's a bit in there that I'll never forget, that to me was one of the funniest things and remains one of the funniest moments I can ever imagine, where, you know, he's all excited about something, I don't remember what, and he's kind of skipping down the street, and, you know, he pats some guy on the back who's sitting on this ledge over the water, and then the guy just falls, and he keeps walking. And he just keeps walking. And I remember that stuff, man. You can listen to that episode right now and get bonus episodes twice a week when you subscribe to the Full Marin. Go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. So this is me with that looper I told you about. I'm not good at the looping. It's very basic. And then I noodled on top of it. But it's different for this part of the show. I listened to it back twice, and I think I did all right.
Monkey and the Fonda, cat angels everywhere.